All right, so if I use this level of voice, will everybody be able to hear me? Because I said the mic was cutting in and out. You're good in the back? Okay. All right, we're still. So the good news about having a terrible time slot at 4 p.m. is no one is coming in after you. So I will be here to take questions if you have it. If you've got to go, go. But I don't have to be done at a certain time. I will make my best to be done at the time. But if anybody wants more information, we'll be able to stay behind after that. So my name is Jason Van Ness. I'm the Director of Work-Based Learning and Youth Apprenticeship for Lowndes County Schools. So real quick, work-based learning in Georgia is we take students, and it's kind of like a capstone where my job is to take a student who is maybe in a welding program to go out and procure a welding apprenticeship for them, and then we release them from school during the workday to go to work. They earn credit three ways: school credit, they earn work, school credit, they get paid, and then a lot of times we'll do that through dual enrollment. And then a fourth way we can also simultaneously earn credit is through a registered apprenticeship with the Department of Labor. So I'm going to talk to you today about an event. I know I have designed this to be purposely ambiguous for about the first 10 slides, and then I will tell you what a reverse career fair is. So we'll go ahead and get started. I want to talk to you, we'll get past all the boring stuff. If you would like to, I'll give you about a bunch of QR codes. This is me on LinkedIn. I really love connecting with people on LinkedIn. I would love to connect with you. All the stuff I do, I put on my website and I put on LinkedIn for free. Okay, I do consult on the side, but that always takes a back seat to just floating the boats. The rising tide floats all ships of work-based learning. Okay, now this was launched in a work-based learning environment, in a work-based learning program, but it can be leveraged in any instructional environment. And we'll walk you through that in a second. So I still see a few phones, and so I'll wait until, and if you don't get it, I'll come back to it. Remember, we have a very soft deadline because of the bad time slot. Okay, no more phones. All right, so also the audio will be posted on this podcast. So if you want to get that, I have that at the end as well, too, just in case you. I would encourage you to engage. If you're a copious note taker, great, take notes. But I will give you the slide deck. I will give you the audio. I'm even recording a little video right now. So I'm going to try and play around. That's my first time using an AI camera. But we'll get all that posted. So if you want to take notes, great. But don't feel like you need to take notes, because I will make all of this available for everybody. All right. So here's the pain point for the reverse career fair. So we'll go through this quickly. We identify the discrepancy. I don't know what subject area you're in, but we notice that we do, in CTE, we do a great job of teaching students our content. Welding students emerge knowing how to weld. Healthcare students emerge knowing how to triage and to give shots and all these things. Okay, regardless of what your instructional area is, we do a great job teaching those students. But what we do a really poor job of is teaching students how to self-advocate. Now, I learned a new term at this conference a few sessions ago called social capital. I didn't know it when I designed it, but this is a social capital exercise. So the pain point is there's a discrepancy between our students' skill set and their ability to market themselves or sell their skills in a traditional environment, like a reverse career fair. Now, I really like this because our students don't have gatekeepers anymore in terms of, so think back when you were little. I'm 43, so if you're a lot younger than me, this may not really apply to you, but if you're my age or older, when I wanted to play with my best friend, you know what I had to do? I had to go over to their house, had to knock on their door, and I had to talk to their mom or dad and say, can Mike come out and play? I was used to talking to adults. Our students now are not used to doing this. They don't know how to self-advocate. They don't know how to ask for what they want in a professional way. So that's part one of the pain point. Part two, how do I create an event that both forces students to engage with employers and this is the most important part, and allows them to fail in a safe environment? So if your programs are not allowing students to fail in a safe environment, we're not pushing them far enough. Education is about failing and then recovering. Failing and recovering. So I want to push them to a failing point and then say, here's how you can improve. And that's going to be different for each student. Some students may fail earlier or later, but I want them to fail. But I want them to fail in a safe environment. I don't want them to fail when they're interviewing for their dream job. Does that make sense? That's what we've got to provide for these students. And the third one is My friend and I brainstormed a session. Her name's Susan Fuller. She is from contiguous county, Crisp County, which is, I am in Valdosta, Georgia, which is almost North Florida, right down 75. So she's a friend of mine, and we kind of brainstormed this event. And she said, hey, here's an event that I kind of used to do that may help solve that problem. And I took that and kind of built on it, and kind of this is where we're going to arrive today. So does the pain point make sense? Students have the skills, can't advocate for their skills. They may be very credentialed, but they're going to crap the bed in the interview. We've got to fix that. And we want to fix it in a way that they can fail in a safe environment, so when they have their dream job, they're not going to, as we said, crap the bed. We want to make sure they have an opportunity to succeed and fail in a safe environment. So here's the primary goal. We wanted to make sure that we equipped each student to self-advocate in preparation for a job interview, to self-advocate in this professional type of communication, and to self-advocate in these networking events, okay? If I'm in your way, you tell me and I move again. I'm testing, oh, I lost my camera. We're gonna try it again. Sorry, everybody. I'm trying to test this camera to make sure it's gonna follow me, and it's not doing it. Maybe I'm too close away. Did it do it again? Here we go, okay. I maybe stood still too long. So if that's the case, I'll just kind of stand here if it's not gonna follow me. So here's the buildup, and what I'm gonna make sure that I wanna talk to you about is the assignments. And this can be built however you wanna build it. This is not something that you have to follow this blueprint exactly, but if you wanna follow it, here's the blueprint, okay? So one, semester assignments. I'm a big fan of U-Science. If you don't know them, it's too late to go meet them in the exhibitor hall, but you should get to know them. This is the engine that drives this program. But you can use whatever aptitude or whatever career assessment tool you choose to use. I use U-Science. Georgia, we have a state contract, so it's very convenient. But they would do a U-Science analysis. Another semester assignment is something I call greetings, introductions, and handshakes. I will literally hide from my students on campus and have to come find me. And they have to approach me, shake my hand appropriately, look me in the eye, have good posture, and they need to have researched me to ask me one or two questions that are not school related. Okay? Now, I don't have a lot of skeletons in my closet. If you do, don't ask your students to research you too much. Okay? But I'm looking for things like, hey, Mr. Vanessa, I saw that you were a missionary in Africa for a few months. Tell me about that. Or, hey, Mr. Vanessa, I saw that you played collegiate sports. Okay, I'm asking anything. There's a lot of information on us that aren't about our day jobs. Now, what am I trying to teach the students in doing that? When you interview for a job, if you're not looking up the hiring manager, the people who are going to be in that interview, you're not doing what you should be doing. You should be doing research on your audience. And I'm teaching the students to research their audience, and I'm going to come back to this in a second. Two, addressing for success. Okay, I make sure they dress. I give them the three or four different types of dress, and then I have them take pictures with people who are dressed that way. Now, I tell them, I am not asking you to take pictures with a stranger, but you can do that and practice the greetings, introductions, and handshakes. If you want to take pictures with a stranger, walk up to someone. If you want to do it in a safe environment, walk up to someone who is at your church that you don't know. Hey, I see that you're dressed professionally. Would you mind taking a picture of me for my assignment? Now, again, I wouldn't recommend telling students to go to the mall and just pick a random person because, you know, there's crazy people out there. But I did that sequentially after the greetings and introductions and handshakes. So should they decide to go up and talk to people, they have the skill set to do so, preparing them for success, not for failure. Three, developing a personal brand. I want to make sure I create that personal brand. You'll see one of my partners helped me do that. Creating a business card and resume, that's stock. Yes, ma'am. I know, it went to sleep. It's the first time I've tried it. I probably don't need to be so quick. I am pretty animated, so just, oh, it's following you now. Oh, yes, I will turn that off. See, look, you should have gone to the AI sessions, right? Because like AI is not always your friend. So I probably should have practiced that a little bit more, but I do tend to be a little demonstrative and animated, so I will, at the end of the session, I will let you watch me delete that. Anyway, so business cards and resumes, that's a staple, right? That's something we should all be doing with our students. LinkedIn endorsements. If you're looking for a portfolio system for your students, I would recommend wholeheartedly you use LinkedIn. One, it's free. Two, it's where employers already are. And three, it is not ephemeral. When students graduate using these school-safe platforms, what happens to their school-safe platforms, their school-safe portfolios? They lose access to those because they're tied to their school email account. But if you put them on LinkedIn, and even if that weren't the case, you still have the remaining obstacle of, if we put them on a school-safe platform, how do I get employer eyes on the resource? So there's two huge obstacles to using these school-safe platforms. Three, if they're in your workplace learning program, put them on LinkedIn and teach them how to behave appropriately on LinkedIn. Why don't we teach them how to behave versus just delaying the inevitable until they become somebody else's problem? Let's do what we're supposed to do and teach them how to behave in the real world. So business cards, resumes, a LinkedIn endorsement. I have them go and have their mentor in workplace learning. I have them provide a LinkedIn endorsement. And here's another question. If in Georgia, we have to evaluate our workplace learning students. So what happens if I go out and I have the student who's doing a great job at their apprenticeship and I get the biggest, best, most just awesome, glowing review of the student? What happens to it? It goes in my filing cabinet. And it does is not a resource for this student to use or leverage moving forward. But what if we put all of our students on LinkedIn and we took that and we put it on LinkedIn and they put it on their featured page or they put it on their accomplishments, their credentials? They can even go down under this under the recommendations, and there's another thing that they use, it's kind of the synonymous endorsements, recommendations and endorsements in LinkedIn. And that student has it in perpetuity for the rest of their life versus sitting in an old, stale filing cabinet. Okay, so how do I get a LinkedIn endorsement? They do letters of recommendations, the traditional letters of recommendations. Those are still valid, right? I have them schedule meetings with me. I know that's not real sexy, but these kids carry around the supercomputer in their phone, and they're like, oh, Mr. V, I forgot we had a meeting. And I was like, you have a $1,000 computer in your pocket that will literally beep and tell you you have a meeting tomorrow. You have a meeting in 10 minutes, 5 minutes. So I make them, I send them out all their meetings. I make them show me an RSVP to the meeting, and I check the RSVP list, and that's their grade. Did you RSVP for my meetings? So simple, but our students, that's an employability skill these students don't have. I make them send me an email, and here it is, seems antiquated. They don't know how to put attachments on emails. They don't, I mean, maybe some of them do, but they don't know how to do that. Make them do it. Show them once, and they'll remember that, okay? Now, two goals with all these assignments. I wanted to develop with these students either a skill or an artifact they were going to use for the reverse career fair. You follow me? A skill like shaking hands, introductions, learning how to dress, or an artifact, letters of reference, LinkedIn endorsements, business card, resume, a skill or an artifact. Everything they do this entire semester is one of the, is designed to do one of those two things. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay, good. Am I going too fast? Am I scaring you? Am I too loud? Okay. I love what I do. One of the other things that we get the chance to do is I make these students at the end of the event, so once they've gone through the event, I have them record a 1 to 2 minute video that I put in a, I kind of amalgamate all of these and I put it in a folder and share it with the students who are coming to the project next semester, telling them here's what I would have done differently, here's what I did, how I did it, here's how I prepared, and now that I've done it, here's what I would do differently. I want these students to take ownership and to teach and mentor the students coming behind them. Now, also, the final is their career fair. Okay, I had them record the video for advice for students. I have them do a survey of the event, like an exit survey. We'll get to some data at the end. Now, their midterm is a, I walk this through in a second, a professional photographer. I partner with her. She comes in and takes headshots for each one of these kids, professional headshots. That's their midterm, scheduling the appointment, coming and getting that done. They have to schedule a one-on-one meeting with me to go over their U-Science results so they know what kind of data to put on their visual. Then their daily assignments, everything else except what's above that comes under their daily assignments. Okay, does that make sense so far? All right, so partnerships, and then we'll get into what the reverse career fair actually is. So you look at this student right here, okay? This young man right here is sitting with House of Representatives, Georgia Power's Public Service Commission officer, a fundraiser, and I don't know if I can make that sound more impressive than it is, like she moves the needle in our community, and the director of dual enrollment for our local technical college. So I told the man, I said, man, you chose pretty wisely. Developing social capital with people who move the needle. But I want to walk you through the partnership. So CJB and Rainwater are the two biggest partners. CJB is a local chemical company, and then Rainwater is the conference center. Now, Rainwater donates the space. So they donate a room about twice this size and the hallway. They give that to me for free. Now, if you've ever set up a conference, you know the space is not where the conference center makes money. Where do they make their money? Food. Okay? So he said, hey, and he's a good buddy of mine. He said, hey, look, our bylaws will not let me let you bring any outside food. You don't have to have food. I'll give you the space for free. But if you want food, you have to go through our department to do that. So I said, well, I don't really have a lot of money, so that's where CJB comes in. They said, we would love to sponsor this. So it's about $40 a plate. I have about 60 to 65 people who come to this event every day. So it's $3,000 to $4,000 a semester that this company wants to partner. Now, if that's an obstacle for you, then you don't have to do the food portion of our event. Okay? So you could do it for free without the food portion. I do have this off campus. I don't want to have this on campus because then it's just another school thing. I want them off campus as a field trip in a professional environment, okay? So I want to thank my sponsor, CJB. They sponsor the meal. Rainwater donates the space. Now, I will tell you this story. L.S. Smith Photography. I posted, here's the power of LinkedIn. I posted the first time I did this event last fall. I posted this on LinkedIn, and she reached out and said, this is a great idea. How can I help? And I said, well, what do you do? She said, well, I'm a photographer. And I said, how about you donate headshots to all my students? So she comes, sets up, takes headshots of all of our students. It's about $700 sitting fee, and then she gives them the pictures for free. Here's what the pictures look like. They're pretty good. She gives them four photos. So what you see here is she gives them, what shape does this look like to you all? It's a LinkedIn banner. Yeah! So I said, can you make sure you give them something that's the same dimensions as a LinkedIn banner? Then she gives them a square, because a lot of your social media accounts want to have a square profile picture. She gives them a transparent picture. These are not models. These are actually some of our students. She gives them a transparent picture so they can put on any background they want. And then she gives them a paper size, 8.5 by 11 size. So they have four photos they can use in perpetuity. It's theirs for free. Now, obviously, her goal is to try and say, hey, look, you've already met me. You've already taken pictures from me. You've been in front of my camera. Do you want to come back and maybe do your senior pictures with me? Okay, that's her gamble. That's her role. We've had some students do that. But that's not the problem. She wants, that's not the goal. That's a side benefit, I guess I would say. Okay, so the students now have the headshots. They can market these moving forward. Okay, they're also learning what to do from this little video. Now, I'm not necessarily going to take the time to show you this video, but when you get it's like a minute and a half long. But she goes through and she talks about how one of her first clients was a young lady who wanted to be not a content creator, like your assistant. Like she wanted to handle like all your appointments, and she basically wanted to be the face for people. But her profile picture, she was wearing like a ragged t-shirt, she had a nose ring, the camera's down here, so her face looks real big. It just wasn't professional. She's like, is this the kind of person you want handling your image, your business image? And she says, no, it's not. And then she said, well, here's what we talked her through. Here's how we did this. And then she shows her headshots after. Okay? So that she created, this photographer created a 15-minute video lesson that my students have to go through. Now, I upload this video into a software, free software called Edpuzzle. If you don't know about it, it's great. You can upload a video and you can stop the video, ask questions, tell Edpuzzle, here's the right answer. And then the student, it'll grade it for you, and it won't let them progress until they get past it. And here's the best part, it'll drop it into your LMS for you, graded. So awesome, I can't believe it's free. Edpuzzle, I'm not sponsored by Edpuzzle, but if they're listening, you can pay me if you want. This is the value of partnership. She saw, and this is the value of LinkedIn. She saw me and reached out to me. I didn't have the idea to do a headshot package until she told me she was a photographer. So posting things, celebrating your kids on LinkedIn is a great way to generate interest and to generate continued and expanded partnerships. Am I in your way?
Not at all.
Okay. All right. Here's a new one. This is a company called Perfectly Polished. They're out of Athens, Georgia. I am not a Bulldog fan. War Eagle. I graduated from Auburn. But they are in Athens. There is a QR code to their website if you're interested in looking them up. They do etiquette trainings. And I'll get to this in the data part, but what I'm going to bring them in, we were going to do it this semester, but Valdosta got hit by the eastern eye wall of Helene, and it kind of just destroyed our community for a little bit. We were out of school for almost a month, so I pushed it back to the spring event, but they'll be down here for the spring. They're going to teach the kids how to dine professionally, and I kind of spoiled the punchline. Basically, during the data, I was so focused on teaching the students how to self-advocate that I didn't think about they don't know how to eat in front of people. And so one of the students, I said, what's your least favorite part? And he said, in their survey, the dining part. And the second question was, why? And he said, I don't know what all these forks are for. And I was like, oh, buddy, that's my fault. That's not on you. That's me. So I failed. We were going to bring that and finish it. But that's another partnership, perfectly polished. Okay? Now, here's what this looks like. Here's what it is. The target audience is my third level work-based learning students. Okay? Why? Because, one, they're a smaller group. Because $40 a plate, I can't have 160 kids in my first year class. I can't afford that. And I don't think CJB is going to pay that kind of money. But two is because these students are also on the precipice of graduation. They're closer to graduation, needing these skill sets more. But I like the smaller group because if I'm going to build an event, I want to build it at like, start off as a floaty in a swimming pool, not a cruise ship. I can turn a floaty around. Once you build the cruise ship in a swimming pool, that ain't moving. You can't pivot, right? So I wanted to have a smaller event I could pivot, maneuver, and make sure that we got taken care of. The other target audience was what I call my industry alphas. I still don't know if it's supposed to have a comma or not. If you're a grammar Nazi, tell me. But I usually put it in here with a comma, okay? So if I'm wrong, just tell me afterwards politely. Don't embarrass me. But I wanted to showcase what my students can do. Industry doesn't know what students can do. Some of them do, but most of them don't. And so I wanted to showcase my students, but I also wanted to do this as a recruiting event for future employers. Okay, this was not designed as a hiring event. This was designed as a showcase event. But each of the last two times I've done it, guess what's happened? Students have gotten hired. They've upscaled their jobs. So this is the target audience, okay? Now, I want you all to take a mental picture of this young man right here and just kind of look at what his visual is, okay? If you're in the very, very back, he built a wall. And we'll get to that in just a second, okay? So here's the three-part design. This is where it is. What does a traditional career fair look like? What does it look like? Yes, you've got employers around the room with their tables, with their banners, with their swag, with all their flashing lights. The same thing you just experienced where? In the vendor hall. And they're just hoping that the students come talk to them, right? Well, traditional career fairs, and maybe you did it better than I could do it, but I usually found out that the students didn't enjoy it because they normally congregate in the middle and don't go speak to people because they're not prepared or don't know how to speak to people, and the employers are dissatisfied because they wasted a whole day of profit to come volunteer and have nothing to show for it, except the three or four really ambitious students who took advantage of that. So what's the logical response? How do you force engagement? You flip the role. So what we do, the flaw with the traditional career fair is you can't guarantee engagement because employers are there and students, you're trusting your students to go engage with employers and that doesn't happen all the time, right? So flip the roles. My students spend the entire semester building their booth, building their visual, adding all these assignments, all these visuals, all these artifacts, learning all these skills, and they come in and they have their booth around the edge of the wall. And then what do? You release the employers or the industry alphas into the room. They know how to engage. So now they're pumped because they can do what they want to do. Go talk to kids. Go meet talent. And the kids are forced to engage because it is literally their final. And they know if they don't do it, I'm not letting them in the program. So that I don't let students come in and say, I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to take the F. I'm like, if you fail this class, you're not staying in. You're done. And I've never really had that problem, right? So the students come up. They talk. The alphas come up. They talk to the student. They're engaging them. Then on the way out, I have a little QR code where the alphas will scan the QR code. It takes them to a Google form where they leave anonymized feedback. Now, why do you think I want this to be anonymous? The picture. Two of the people I showed you in that picture are elected officials. I don't want someone losing a vote because they were mean to my baby. So it's anonymous because I don't want people lose. I want to keep my alphas coming, right? So I want it to be honest feedback. I don't want the people to feel like they have to sugarcoat their feedback. So I say it's going to be anonymized. So that's the first step. Here's what this looks like. The first year I actually did paper evaluations, and I have a good friend of mine. has a little bit of a physical disability. And she said, Jason, that was in the Alpha survey. She said, that was hard for me to have so many pieces of paper. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm dumb. I'm like a digital person. So I created, if you want to scan this QR code, it'll show you what the actual template looks like for the evaluation. But so this is this young lady, Ella is her name. And so this is the kind of data I'm collecting. So this spreadsheet is what they get from me, okay? One, they're being evaluated on the alphas on booth creativity and setup. Two, engagement and communication. Three, portfolio demonstration and visual. Four, professionalism and dress. Five, the likelihood that the employer, the alpha, would hire this person. Even if they're out of content, did they have enough of a personality that you would hire them? Okay, then I asked them questions. Did the student mention or reference their U-Science results? That's a big part of the rubric. Did the student drive you to their LinkedIn portfolio? And then did the student have reference materials for you to look at, use, take with you on their booth? And then any notes, general notes. So it takes the alpha about 30 seconds to a minute to do that real quick. And I like this because then I have to write it. They can literally go to the notes section, press the microphone, and speak into their phone while they're going to the next student booth. So it's a lot more efficient way to capture this data. Now, the second part of this is the plated meal, the informal part, where they're learning how to sell and network, market themselves in a casual environment. So let's just pretend for a second that you come to a session, there is a pretty generally good-looking bald guy who's presenting, and you're like, I want to hire this guy to come do a presentation for my faculty, right? This is the formal selling point. But where are contracts signed and where are checks cut? Typically over drinks, maybe at the bar. I can't teach my students that. So a lot of times it does happen over a meal. And so I simulate this type of thing where the students come in and they eat with the people. So this is the casual side of selling and advocating for your skill sets. So they've got the formal side in the networking part, and this is just to sit there, and you've got another one of my House representatives, elected official, Representative Dexter Sharper, and he loves investing in kids. He loves it. And so he's sitting here, man, just taking them to church, just talking about this is what you should have done. This is how it, I mean, just doing good work. So you've got him, okay? You've got a local business owner and the director of work-based learning for the entire state of Alabama. So he drove from Alabama to come to this event. Yes, sir. This is after. This is after. So the first. So from 10 to 12 is the networking portion. From 12 to 1 is the plated meal. No, I do this during a school day. Yeah. So my students are released from school to go to work, and so most of them are get out of school at lunch. I just make them NI or put them as a field trip for first and second block, and they're exempt from school that day because this is their event. That's a great question. Thank you for. I always forget to say that. So thank you for bringing it up. So again, the normal scenario, the casual side is like things happen on the golf course, at a restaurant, at a bar. This is the most efficient way, an ethical way that I could teach my students that follow-up networking. So they have a choice. I met this person at my booth and had a really good conversation, so I want to go and I want to invest more into this individual, right? Or they can say, I didn't meet this person, so I want to go sit next to them and I want to meet them because I didn't get a chance to. That's the kind of thing, the higher level thing that we as professionals have to do. Do I want to go and invest into take a relationship deeper, or do I want to have more contacts and a wider scope? That is social capital. That's what it is. They're learning how to develop this network, okay? So that's the second part. Now, the third part, it's so simple, and I'm really proud of it, okay? I'm really, really proud of it. Alpha bingo. So remember the where I had them come ask me questions, and they had to practice researching me? So what I do is I give the students a list of all of the alphas who've RSVP'd about 2 weeks before the event. This year I gave it to them at the beginning of the semester, and I said, research everybody, and I'll let you know as they don't. If they regret, I'll take them off the list. So their job is to go through and begin to research these people. What they do is, and I want them to know, like one of my tricks for a job interview, so don't use it if you're ever interviewing for a job that I'm interviewing for, because it's my trick. I like to research the people, and my goal is to call the people by name before they introduce themselves. Like, let's just say Mr. John is coming up to talk to me, And he goes to shake my hand. I'm like, hey, Mr. John, how are you doing? And I like to reference their background in the job interview. Okay, is that going to get me a job? No, but it could make, if I'm even with somebody, that may be what gets me the job. Okay, so when an alpha comes up to their booth, I want them to try to do that if possible. I said, but the same way, I don't do it unless you're sure. Because if you call them the wrong name, you're going to look silly. The same thing we have to do as adults. But then each student has a bingo card, a randomized bingo card, with 25 of however many alphas come. And if they get the alpha right, they'll hand the alpha the bingo card, and they will initial their name on their spot. Okay? And I have another one of my partners donates two $100 bills. The first person to get bingo gets a $100 bill. The first person to either finish or whoever gets the most at the end of the day gets the other $100 bill. Now, what am I trying to teach them? Know your audience, research, the same thing you and I have to do with this. Now, the judges don't have names. Their name tags say judge one, judge two, judge three, judge four. Okay? Now, one thing I'm doing a little bit different this year is I have my alpha list, but then I opened up the event to entire organizations. So I am trying to make sure these students, there are a lot of people who are going to be there who aren't on the alpha list. One, I want to distract the students. And two, I want them to be busy. I don't want to see a student sitting waiting on someone to come to their booth. Okay? I want them to be busy. So again, the forced student conversation, they have to inquire and listen because and use their deductive reasoning. So if I give them a hint and say, this is Mr. Representative Sharper, he is a Georgia House of Representatives person, okay? If they couldn't find a picture, which would be silly, but they can, they know there are four people on this list who are elected officials in the Georgia Senate. So as soon as he says, I say, hey, well, what do you do? Well, you know, I'm one of your, you know, senators or one of your House Representatives. Oh, okay, this is at least one of these four people. And then you begin to ask pressing questions, and then you get into the research part, and you can eventually deduce, if you couldn't find a picture, oh, this must be Representative Sharper. And then you call them by name, because again, their name is not on their badge, it's a judge number. And then they do it. Now, here's one twist. You know these kids, man, they will game a system, right? They will game it. If my name's Jason, if they say, hey, you are Luke Smith, and I say, no, I'm not. I don't cross out my name. I cross out Luke Smith's name. Because you know these kids would get with their buddy and be like, you go get everybody wrong and find out who they are and we'll split the money. Okay? So Alpha Bingo forces them to do the research, forces them to spend some time investing. And this semester, I actually created a little PowerPoint template. So this is kind of what it looks like. Here's the Alpha Bingo list. It's not real sexy, okay? Because I can't make that until at the very end. Okay, that's like the last thing I make. But here's the alpha list. I've redacted the names to sound cool and official, but I took the names off the list. But I do tell them where they work and what city they're from. So that's pretty simple. You can look for who they work. I can go to that county website and just research the people. Find a picture. Find the staff page. Do something. Find a way to make sure that you get this. I do give them three lifelines. They say, Mr. V, I cannot find this person. And I say, okay, this is this person. I'll give them three lifelines. Any questions so far? Oh, man, we're doing great. Okay, so here's the instructions to the alphas. The first semester, I sent out an email. Okay, because, you know, I'm a teacher. I like to be organized. And then people showed up the morning of, and guess what they said? What are we supposed to do? And I'm like, oh, you didn't read the email. So now I do four or five Zoom meetings a day or two before. And it's just 5 to 10 minutes. They pop on whenever they can. I give them the instructions, tell them how it's going to work, and then they're ready to go. Okay? So, but this, as you can kind of see, I put this here, a screenshot, so you can see what it is that they're supposed to be doing, but now we cover that in a Zoom meeting. So, moving forward, after this, if any of you are wanting to fly down to Georgia and be a part of, be one of my alphas, I would love to have you come do it. My event is Wednesday when I get back. Next Wednesday is this next event. So I got to get back and finish all these things. The alphas could come whenever that fit their schedule. So here, now, so example, I want to show you kind of before we get into event feedback. So what do you think students tried to bring to this event? What do you think their visual, what are most of their visuals going to be? What would you think? Oh, business cards are part of it, but like their big visual, Because that's what they've all, that's all they've known. Right? Now this kid, and now this is a term of affection for me, but he's one of my knuckleheads, right? He is a commercial and electrical construction apprentice. I could not get him to turn his work in on time, but dadgummit, his evaluations at work were just superior. But he just didn't like school, right? So most of these kids bring in trifolds. Well, this joker builds a wall with a receptacle, like a switch panel, and a working receptacle, a working ceiling fan, and a working light. So when that was his visual, because he was in construction and electrician. And so when they would walk up, he was like, hey, he had a little charger, like three different chargers for all the different phones. He's like, would you like to charge your phone while we talk? And I was like, who is this kid? Where have you been all semester, right? And I was like, man, as you can see right here, so I kind of tried to crop it, like he's got a little iPhone charger because he's talking to this person, and they're like, the knucklehead was the most impressive because you gave him a chance to do what? Something that shows off their skill set. And it's crazy. Now, did a lot of them have trifolds? Yes. And were the trifolds good? Some of them. Were some of them bad? Yeah, they were. And I told them, I said, if your booth sucks, I told the alphas, if it's not attractive, don't go to it. Are you going to go buy something from someone who's got a janky booth? No. They have to learn that concept. So that's kind of here. So here's the event feedback. The alpha feedback. If you want to see the actual feedback, you can scan that QR code. There's all the data. Or you can wait until I give you all the resources and you can scan it later. But alpha feed, so these are the industry professionals. In the fall of 23, 76% said it was extremely effective. The other 24% said it was very effective. All of them said it was better than just effective. Very or extremely effective. Okay, in terms of rating it. Now, what about the concept of the Verse Career Fair? Alphas rated 86% of them. Said it was extreme. The concept, the new idea was an extremely effective idea. 14 very, nothing below that. Okay. Now time frame. This is interesting. Now think about this. How many of you struggle to get industry into your classrooms? Look at this result. 71% said it's perfect. Good. Did a good job, right? Almost 30% said we want more time with the kids. That's how you know it's an effective event, when the industry is saying, we want to be here longer. We want to be out of the, now, I mean, depending on how they are, you know, hopefully they want to be at work, but they want to spend more time with the kids. They're like, I didn't get a chance to talk to everybody because the conversations were just so good. So that's the alpha feedback. Now let's get into the student feedback, okay? Student feedback, again, QR code to the data. 90% of the students. Now, I'm going to be honest. I could have told you who those three students who were going to say no were before the event started. Okay, but 90% of the students said they felt more or better prepared to network as a result of going through this. Now let's look at the individual data. Rating of the overall effectiveness of the event. Now these are students. Now I told them, to be honest. 36% said extremely effective, 46% said very effective, and 18% said effective. I didn't get one single negative comment about the event from these students. Okay, in terms of effectiveness of the booth presentation. Extremely effective, 46%, 27% very, 18% effective. Two somewhat, again, I told you who those would have been before this event started. Now, the other part, this is interesting. 27% said that they somewhat thought that they felt the lunch portion was somewhat effective. Because I didn't do my job. They weren't prepared to eat. They were prepared to sell their skills, but they literally were sitting there saying, why do I have three forks on my, I don't know which one to go with. And I was like, oh yeah, my fault. Now, that was the fall. Let's go to the spring student survey. 100% of students said they felt better prepared to go through a process like this. No, this is, so I'm on the block schedule. So I've done this event three times. So this is next semester a year ago. Okay, and then the previous slide was a year ago from this semester. So I do this event twice a year. 50% said it was extremely effective, 38% said very, 16% said effective, and then 6% said somewhat effective, okay, rating the overall effectiveness. Okay, in terms of the booth presentation of the event, 5% or 50% said extremely, 4, 38 very, 13 effective, no negative comments, and then In terms of the lunch portion, again, I got one person because I wasn't able to get that. I did a little bit, but not as much as I wanted to. So we went ahead and we pivoted to bring people in the next year, and then Hurricane Helene kind of delayed that even further. So I still expect a little bit of negative comments about the lunch portion because the students haven't been officially trained. And I'm going to, again, give them a modicum of intervention here, but just tell them, you know, like send them some YouTube videos and stuff, because that is definitely not my skill set. You probably wouldn't want to eat with me. I don't know all those things, so not my strength. So here's some of my favorite student quotes, and we'll have some time for student or some questions at the end from y'all. Favorite student quotes. What was your least favorite part of the event? Looking at the results. So students can be clever, right? Maybe eating because I never learned how to properly eat. Again, kind of like a punch to the gut, like you plan this event, you're like so happy and proud of it, and you're like, oh, forgot something. Well, it's just fine. We're human. Pivot, add it in later, let's go through it. Preparing for the event was very stressful. Why was it stressful? It was stressful because no one's ever forced them to self-advocate. No one's ever forced them to go and develop this social capital. They're used to writing reports and used to doing presentations in front of their peers. They're used to doing the things that we do in classes. Push them to fail in a safe environment and then tell them how they can get better and not fail moving forward. Favorite student quotes. Okay, what was your favorite part of the event? Showcasing my skills. I love it. Now, this young lady, she won both the first to out. She won $200. She won both parts. Like, she had, like, a whole research list, and it was because of her submission to me that I said, I'm going to give every one of them a research template. Okay? So, showcasing my skills. Another one, being able to be, now, this kid's not a wordsmith, being able to be a salesman for myself to the alphas. Okay? But I got the intent. You get the intent. He's confident now selling his skills. Meeting new people that can give me valuable advice. That is what? Social capital. Meeting new people that can give me valuable advice. That's social capital. And these students need to learn the value of networking and building this into their career development. Okay? Now, here are some key takeaways. One, listen to industry. When they tell you what they are seeing in the workforce, listen to industry when they tell you what they're seeing in the workforce, because it's the industry that said, hey, look, your kids are skilled, but they're not interviewing really well, Jason. Okay, now let's build an event that helps them with that. Okay, it was industry that helped us identify the pain point of the lack of self-advocacy, the lack of social capital. Okay, another key takeaway, include industry in the planning of an assessment of new curriculum and events. Your advisory board and industry should be driving your curriculum. If you are viewing your advisory board as a hoop to jump through for Perkins compliance, you're missing the boat. They should be your biggest advocate and your best resource. They should drive your program. This made the event even more authentic for the students because we had industry included in this. Challenge students. Push them beyond the content of your classroom. Force them to leverage that content in a networking environment just like this. And again, if money is the issue, you don't have to do the meal portion. Or if money is the issue, here's a tidbit. If you're a director, if you're like, hey, we don't have money, do you have a culinary program? Because you can't use Perkins funds to buy a lunch. But you can use Perkins funds to pay for your culinary teacher to cook meal, and then, oh, what are we going to do with the food? You serve it to your people. You can use Perkins funds for that, because it's instructional. So challenge the students, push them beyond the content of your classroom. Implement self-advocacy and social capital and all these types of things in your curriculum, regardless of your instructional area. And then lastly, rethink the efficacy of the traditional classroom or school practice. Rethink it. Rethink the efficacy of what you're doing. Are you preparing students to enter the workforce completely skilled with no skill set to get the job? Remember, I don't know if you heard in the opening session, the one that I went to, 70 to 85% of the jobs are obtained because of social capital, not because of what you know. Now, whether you agree with that or not, it's not our job to assess that. It's our job to know that and say, then I better make sure my students have social capital, because they cannot get that job if they don't have the ability to network and market their skill set. So the reverse career fair is a better model for student development and can still, if you want to, become a hiring event. Now, I did this in work-based learning where all my students came from a variety of 16 different pathways with over, or 16 different clusters with over 50-something different pathways that my school offers. Okay, now could you leverage this if you're a healthcare teacher? Yes. You're graduating healthcare students, do the same thing, and who do you bring in? People from the healthcare industry and your advisory board. This does not have to be work-based learning. This can be any single instructional area in your class, okay? Now, here's what I'm gonna do. I put this QR code here. This QR code is going to take you to a document that has everything on it. Now, it's all linked, okay? I don't know how it's gonna look on your phone, but it's just a Google Doc. It's gonna have a logo and it's gonna have everything on it, even the data and the qualitative part and the quantitative part. It's gonna have all that on there, but also links to documents. Now, I despise when I attend a session and someone has this stuff, but then they don't want to engage with me afterward. Okay, I'm making myself available to you. If you have questions about this, I'll go back to my slide and my LinkedIn. Send me a message on LinkedIn. Also, check out the audio for that on the podcast. You can check out her video on the podcast as well. I'm just playing. But you, I'm trying to. I hope this is easy for you. We've got just a few. Actually, it's right at time. So if you've got to go, feel free to go. But I will stay here and answer questions as long as people have questions to ask. So thank you very much. And anybody have any questions?